But I was just showing up like an amateur. I wasn't researching as long as I could have been. I wasn't ensuring I got enough sleep. I wasn't eating the things that made me feel good. I wasn't going to the sauna on a morning time that would make me feel energized when I got there on the evening time. I wasn't doing breath work before a show if I felt nervous or if I felt tired. I wasn't researching breath work to work out what sorts of breath work I could do that would engender me into a particular sort of state if I needed to be brought up a little bit, if I needed to calm myself down a little bit. So I was saying outwardly, I want all of this stuff. I want to achieve these things and I have the capacity to. But when you looked at my efforts, they didn't stack up against that.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to Take a Deep Breath. My name is Mike. I'm your breathwork coach and host. And my job on this podcast is to find you really interesting guests in the field, ideally in breathwork, but we do venture outside. But we're looking at health modalities so that we can live our best lives. And today, oh, have I got a guest for you. The chap is called Chris Williamson, and he runs a podcast and YouTube channel called Modern Wisdom, which you absolutely check out. And I came across Chris through various other channels that I was watching. And little did I know that only 2-3 weeks ago, he himself would be a guest on Joe Rogan's podcast, which is really freaking cool. So I highly recommend you watch this first and then maybe jump over and see being Chris interviewed by Joe Rogan. So it's a very, very cool stuff. Chris is a model and a podcaster and a club promoter. And he has a very unique story where he was on a British TV show called Love Island, where they put a load of very attractive people together on an island and filmed them for, I don't know, 24 hours a day for so many weeks. I've never actually seen that. I probably should watch an episode. Might be in other countries as well. But he was on there and he had a little bit of a kind of a crisis, come to God kind of moment, and really pivoted his life. And he's very much into wellness. He's got some stories around breath work. He's interviewed James Nestor, who's the author of Breath, on his podcast, and Brian McKenzie and a few others. But Chris has got a really unique base of knowledge because, again, a bit like Joe Rogan, he's interviewed so many experts in so many fields that we delve into breath work, but we just talk generally about life, about strategies, about morning routines, about personal development. So this is a much broader breathcast, and I hope you really get some value from this. I've just been re-watching it back while I was doing the editing. I was like, bloody hell, and I was making more notes because it's been a few months since I watched this. So make sure you stick all the way through because there's so much information here. And I've put some of Chris's links below. He also has a really fantastic reading list that is worth checking out. So before we get started, just a couple of messages from me. I just want to say a big thank you, first of all, because for those watching and listening, we're almost at 50 episodes now of the podcast. And as of late, it's been a bit hectic in my life. I've been off doing all different bits and bobs, and I've not been as regular with this podcast as I wanted to be, and I will be. And so I wanted to just say a personal thank you, because there are people out there every week that are downloading and listening to this podcast. And I've never met you, and I just want to say a big thank you. And my commitment is I'm going to really ramp this up. I've got quite a lot of guests already recorded. And on top of that, I've got a whole load of exciting people coming. So I really want to get to the space where it's at least once a week I'm bringing you really valued entertainment and really good guests. Because at the end of the day, it's about bringing you knowledge. I don't want to waste your time. And I want to make sure that if you put those headphones in and you go for a walk or a run or whatever you're doing when you're listening to this, I want to make sure that you're getting some real aha moments, in particular around breath work, because obviously that's the main foundation of all of this. So it's a big thank you, and there's a lot of exciting stuff coming. And then the only other thing really is I've got a lot more videos coming on YouTube soon. A lot of exciting stuff around helping people learn more about breath work. And for those of you that may not be aware, I do have a course out right now, Functional Breathing. So this is for people that maybe want to lower stress, maybe feelings of anxiety, dampen those down and help feel better, more relaxed. People that maybe feel a bit breathless, asthma, problems sleeping. This course really tackles the fundamental basics of what is breathing, why do we breathe, why are we breathing poorly, and what we can do about it. And there's kind of functional exercises. So I very slowly get you back to the way nature intended, which is to breathe functionally and to breathe efficiently. So if that sounds like anything you're interested in, the link is down below. I would be honored to be your digital breath coach and be with you, and you can ask me questions and I'll reply back. And the other thing is, it's completely risk-free. So if you buy it and you don't like it or I'm boring you, you can just contact me and get your money back. But we've had fantastic feedback from people, beautiful reviews, people making really nice transformations in their life with this course. So something I'm very, very proud of, and I hope you'll click on the link and have a look at that as well. Anyway, as I say, enough yabbering from me. Chris is far more attractive and interesting. So let's pop on over now to Mr. Chris Williamson. Here we go. Cheers. How are you doing, first of all?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Thank you very much for having me.
Good, good. Yeah, well, it is my pleasure. I came across you on YouTube. 572 videos. I don't know if you've seen that figure recently, but that's what's come up on your channel, which is very impressive. And God knows how many millions of views you've had. And so I'm just really keen to kind of pick your brain today. I know you've had people on your podcast, such as James Nestor. So I know you've got an awareness of breath, and I'm sure we'll get into some of that today. But I always like to start, if we can, with a bit of a backstory. So for those that have never come across Chris Williamson before, maybe not heard of Modern Wisdom, maybe you could share a little bit about who you are and how you got to be the person that's got 572 videos and millions of views on YouTube. A big question, I know, but one maybe all the same, that'd be good to hear from you on.
Those people need to pull their head out of their ass. Start watching some of my videos. Come on. So yeah, I'm a club promoter by trade. I was a professional party boy for 10 years. I did reality TV. I did Take Me Out and Love Island, which are quite sort of fluffy reality TV shows over here in the UK. And then I decided I wasn't really fulfilling myself in the way that I thought I should. Getting people drunk was fun and it made money. I mean, it gave me status, but it didn't really fulfill me existentially. So I wanted to do some more self-work and self-inquiry and mindfulness. And the podcast Modern Wisdom is a big part of that. And yeah, like you say, we're whatever, nearly four years deep now, 400 episodes-ish, Jordan Peterson, Robert Greene, James Clear, Aubrey Marcus, Ryan Holiday. And it's what I love to do. It's what I spend a lot of my time doing and thinking about and putting my passion into. And that brings me right up to this moment now where I'm talking to you.
Fantastic. And by the way, I absolutely love the podcast, and the Jordan Peterson episode was fantastic. And I haven't seen the Ryan Holiday one, but I do have in my room The Daily Stoic, which I make an attempt to look at every day, which is very helpful. I'm keen to know, what was that existential scratch or itch that made you think, what's going on here? What was it that caused that?
Yeah, so I did Love Island, and I was playing a role for a long time of this big name on campus, party boy, big dick around town guy, standing on the front door of the nightclubs, and everyone knows your name and they need you for guest list, and you're seen at the right tables and you're sleeping with the right girls and all that stuff. And that was my 20s, and it was fun. Fuck, it was pretty fun. But I spent this time on Love Island with undistracted, locked in a villa with TV cameras everywhere, surrounded by people who were the person that I thought I was pretending to be. So they were these super outgoing, very extroverted party boys and party girls. And when I didn't have any place to hide and I was doing it for 24 hours a day for a month, I realized that there was a discordance between them and me. I thought I was part of that crew. I thought that that was the person that I was. And it was plainly obvious that I wasn't. So I thought, it came out of the villa, and the night that I finished, it was like a surprise eviction thing, and me and another girl left. And it was the south coast of Mallorca. That is one of the premium night sky observation spots in Europe. It's very low light pollution, very clear skies. And I'd finished up, I'd been through this very intense experience. It was an emotional goodbye to all of these people that I'd been through this very bizarre sort of villa thing with. And then finally, the first time that I was alone in 4 weeks without cameras on me, where I was on my own, I'd been given a beer, just a single beer at this crazy hotel, and it was pitch black because all the lights were out because it was super late at night. It's 12:30, 1 in the morning. And I look up at the sky and the entire Milky Way was there. The whole Milky Way from horizon to horizon, all I could see, it was like someone had taken glitter and thrown it at the sky. And it was just a very sort of shocking, profound way to finish that experience, and it just stuck in my mind. And as I was sort of looking up at it, the whole experience had kind of kick-started in me a minor existential crisis. Mm-hmm. Not one where you spiral down into some void of despair, but more just, look, there's something up here. You thought you were this person, and you're not. You thought that these values and these accolades and these achievements were the things that you actually cared about in life, and they're not. And it's plainly obvious to you. So you need to work out what's wrong. Because if you keep on doing this, if you keep on playing this game, you're not going to grow anymore. So I spent a long time just getting rid of all of that. So I'm not saying that Love Island propelled me into an existential crisis, but it was the gateway drug to a better pivot in my life.
Nice. Okay, so yeah, that really helps. Thank you. And I had a moment, not necessarily existential, but I was on Snowdon a couple of years ago on Boxing Day in the dark, climbing in my pants, trying to do a Wim Hof experience, just two of us. And it didn't end, it obviously ended all right because I'm here now, but it could have ended quite badly. But there was this moment when we knew we were safe and we were walking back down Snowdon, down a really nice, I think it's called Lamberis Path. It's a really nice, safe path. And same thing, just sprinkled with stars everywhere. And it was just this kind of holy crap moment of, yeah, look how insignificant and significant we can be at the same time. Any messages out there to people that have maybe got a bit of a funny feeling or they're not quite sure they're on the right path? What could you maybe advise them or share with them to help them maybe go in a slightly different step?
I think that space was what facilitated me realizing what was going on. I was unable to distract myself. Love Island, for the people that haven't watched it, I'm just talking about this fucking dream world. But for the people that have, you'll know that it looks like it's really, really fun, but it's really boring. You're spending 23 hours out of every day just sat around a pool talking to Omar about that girl that mugged him off last night, bruv. Like, that's how you're spending your day. And distance, for me, was the thing that gave me the opportunity to really kind of peer inside of myself. So I would highly advise a little bit of a retreat, maybe. It doesn't need to be a meditation retreat, because, again, although you're technically not being stimulated, you're doing something, right? Your focus isn't on self-inquiry there. It's on just meditation and clearing your mind and focusing on the breath. So definitely look at some distance. If there are creators out there that speak to you, whether that be a Joe Rogan or a Jordan Peterson or a Sam Harris or whoever it is, whatever your particular brand of honesty and truthfulness content is, I'd just bathe in that for a good period of time. So I'd get some distance away from the normal day-to-day stuff that you do, and I'd take some books that speak to you and listen to some podcasts that resonate with you. And then you need to try and work out what's true. And that was the hardest thing for me, because I'd lost my way by constantly compromising the person that I was to try and be the sort of person I thought would make other people like me. So it came from a place of severe unconfidence in my true self. So I thought, right, people wouldn't like Chris, but club promoter Chris, he's a whole other animal, and he was a fair bit of an animal. So, like, I can be this guy, I can play this role, and people will love that role. And sure enough, after a little while, you get positive reinforcement, so you start to become that person more and more, and you forget what it's like to actually be you. So looking at the places where you tell little lies is a really good way to identify this. What are the things that I'm not saying to people around me, or that I am saying that aren't true? Lies by omission or commission. What are the things that I do that cause me to degrade my own integrity? Because even if you don't think that you're keeping count, your brain is. There's a little ticker at the back of your mind. It's keeping count every time you decide to tell a lie, every time that you decide to not be honest and virtuous. You're degrading your own sense of self-respect. At least you are if you have a conscience, and I have quite a strong conscience. And I would wager a lot of the people that are listening to your show do too. So give yourself some distance. Listen to the sort of content that speaks to you. Look at where you are lying, little lies, big lies, omission, commission. I mean, the Jordan Peterson episode for this is absolutely fantastic, the one that I did with him. So I'll give you the link and we can throw it in the show notes below. It's just phenomenal. Like a really, really good breakdown of some of the common pitfalls that people find when they're trying to do transformation. And it was the podcast that I wish that I'd had when I was doing it, and I ended up recording it 4 years too late. But yeah, there's some ideas.
Yeah, but that podcast probably wouldn't have been the same podcast had you not been through those four years.
What do you mean? What do you mean, speak your logos forward? What are you talking about, Jordan?
I need to get stuck into that. Where do you see yourself on the introvert extrovert scale?
It depends on your definition. It's always an interesting one talking about introversion and extroversion, because when you ask someone exactly what they mean, it's difficult to get an appropriate confirmation of what they're talking about.
Where do you draw your energy from? Being by yourself.
Okay, that's the best. So you use the same definition as me, which is, I think, a best one. Where do you get your energy from? Do you find that if you've spent your time around a bunch of people that you need to go home and recharge? Or do you find that if you've spent a lot of time on your own that you need to be around people to recharge? That's the best way to decide extroversion and introversion. So I like to recharge on my own, but I adore being around my friends. I adore spending time around them, but I'm an only child. I've spent a good bit of time in solitude. That being said, I've also met a million people on the front door of nightclubs, so you can switch it on and switch it off as is needed. And I think this is why people sometimes get confused with those terms about extroversion and introversion, because they go, well, I love being around other people, and I can actually be relatively confident and charismatic in a group. I mustn't be an introvert, but fuck, I get knackered when I actually have to spend 5 hours at a wedding or something. You go, so that's why you need to change the definition.
Yeah, because I think it was quite poisonous in my younger years, because I remember people saying, oh, you're an introvert, you're very shy. And suddenly you have this negative connotation that's associated with the word introvert, where actually there's, and you know, it's very non-binary, isn't it? You can be one or the other, and you can fluctuate between the two, and you can be at one end of the scale of the other. I was just very curious because I too, you know, very, very happy to be amongst groups of people. I can be switched on, I can do all those sorts of things, but I'm exhausted afterwards. And part of that actually is the breath, which we might come on to actually, because there's a lot of talking can actually drain us down. Our ancestors didn't do that much talking, but that's another subject for another time maybe. So let's talk a bit about your TED Talk. So that piece around, I think it was, is it embracing your weirdness? Have I said that right? Please explain that a bit more, because I'd love people to understand what's going on there.
Okay, so the Love Island experience for me highlighted that I'd compromised the person that I truly was in an effort to try and please those around me and become popular. Mm-hmm. So I kind of broke it down into three main areas. So success in work, success in relationships, and success spiritually. So success in work, a lot of the time, people believe that in order to get the job that they want, they should do what everyone else is doing. This person is successful, therefore if I model what they do and I try and fit myself into their block, that I will become successful also. But you are no more competitive in the market. You are far less competitive in the market being your version of someone else. Like if I try and make my podcast Joe Rogan, if I do my best Joe Rogan impersonation all of the time, the very best I can hope for is being the second best Joe Rogan on the planet. That's what I've got waiting for me.
Yeah.
So you can escape competition through authenticity, because no one can beat you at being you. Mm. You literally are the best you that you can be. And all of the weird quirks that you've got, the way that you say the letter S, and the fact that one arm extends back more than the other, and the funny farting noise that you make when you sit down on the whatever it is, all of the things that you have, all of those contribute to a unique offering. So that's how you become more competitive, through your embracing yourself, because it means that no one else can compete with you. And then when you're talking about relationships, no one in all of history has ever said, why do you love her? Oh, I love her because her opinions are so predictable. Like I'm so unbelievably turned on by the mauve beige tone that everything she says has. It's just, I adore the fact that I know one of her views and can accurately predict everything else. No. The reason that we love people is because of their idiosyncrasies, because of their weirdness. And again, with that, if you're trying to be someone else, the very best that you can hope for is getting the person that they were made for, that person's partner was made for, just getting them when they weren't looking for the real version. You're like a knockoff version of the person you're trying to be in a relationship. And then spiritually was the real sort of kicker, that if you don't fully embrace everything that you are and put yourself forward into the world, utilizing all of the past traumas and the social norms and the way that you've dealt with whatever you had in school, everything. If you don't put that out into the world, you are leaving the universe less beautiful and less complex, because you're curbing all of the different edges of everything that you are. So I use this example about Salvador Dali, who is a mentalist, like an absolute mentalist. He had his muse that he fell in love with, this woman who he fell in love with, and she was married, and he made her leave her partner and then marry him. And then instantly he bought her a castle, and wouldn't go and see her without formal written invitation from her, living in the castle that he'd bought her. So he got wrenched out of a deep sea diving suit that he was suffocating inside of while he was trying to give a seminar. This guy's off the scale. Here's another one. His parents had an older brother that died 9 months before he was born, called Salvador, and his parents were adamant that he was a reincarnation of his dead infant brother. So I mean, when that's how you start your life, it's only going to get kind of more weird from then. He used to throw himself down the stairs as a child because he was just masochistic. He'd enjoy throwing himself down the stairs. So anyway, Salvador Dali's got all of these bizarre things, right? But he creates surrealism. He creates this amazing new body of work. And if he hadn't embraced his weirdness, if he hadn't fully utilized all of the things that contribute to him being him, then the universe would not have got his work. Because as brilliant as they were, Da Vinci didn't do Dali, and Michelangelo didn't do Dali, and Botticelli didn't do Dali. None of them did his work. So had he not utilized everything that he was to manifest it into his proposal for the universe, the world would have been fundamentally less complex and beautiful. And that's what I would call the weirdness imperative. So there is a compulsion. You are compelled, you should be compelled to put what you can out into the world, because nobody else can. And if we want the human race and our civilization to move forward with the most complex, the most advanced, the most beautiful, the most virtuous way that we can do it, we need everybody to try and do what only they can do, or else we're just congealing toward the center of the normal distribution, and that's pointless.
Yeah, I love her because she's so normal. I don't think I've heard those words. You know, it's the challenge for me here is because I listened to that before we had our phone conversation 6 weeks ago, whenever it was. And I watched that TED Talk then. And my background is all corporate. So, you know, I fell into this breathwork thing, really cosmic mistake of going through a divorce and then finding there was one space left on the Wim Hof retreat in 2016 and flying out to Poland not knowing what to expect and all this wonderful stuff. And then suddenly I've got a podcast and a YouTube channel, and all these things were this is not the guy that spent 15 years in the corporate environment. But I always knew, and I think I love the song Creep by Radiohead, you know, but I always knew I'm a bit weird. We're all a bit weird. And there was a real strange validation that came from that TED Talk. So it's a big thank you from me, actually, first of all, because I really like that. That's really helped. But I do feel like there's a big problem here for a lot of people, because I'm still in the corporate world to some degree and will be for a little bit longer. And where I'm coming from, and I've worked for some major corporations, weird isn't very good. Weird puts you in a box that helps stops you from getting promoted. And so I've been able to embrace my weirdness through, you know, going on a retreat and then getting on a podcast and doing all these different things. And so I've been able to kind of scratch that itch outside of the corporate world. So I don't know if that's the advice you'd give or you'd say something else, because I think there's probably, you know, thousands of people that will hopefully watch this that are thinking, I'm a bit weird, but I've got a job that if I start being a bit weird in that job, I might lose my job and my mortgage. So how can I be weird and keep my job?
Yeah, I think you're right. There are times and places for you to embrace what it is that you're up to. You know, you might be really into BDSM, but if you're working as a nurse in an ICU, it's probably not the time to talk about it. So, yes, know your audience is part of it. There's nuance to this.
Yes.
It can't just be as weird as possible all the time. What I don't want people to do is to think that they're something that they're not, or to try and pretend to be something that they're not. You can play the role at work. I speak differently to my mum as I do to my mates, but I'm still being my truthful self with both of those groups of people. I'm not being some different version of me, as being some different person with my mum than I am when I'm on a night out with the lads, but I don't act the same. So yeah, horses for courses, I think, and tread carefully around the people that you know that you need to, and then find an outlet like you have.
So let's talk a bit about, have you had any experiences of breath, and what was maybe some of you, how did you find James Nestor, first of all, and what was that like for you?
James is great. I love his work. I actually had Brian McKenzie on a year and a half, about 2 years ago probably now, and he got me onto the State app, which is his State Shift, I think it's called, which is his app on iOS. And man, it's like £2.50 a month, or maybe less, maybe £1.50 a month. And it's awesome. It's super simple. There's four different pathways, and I really enjoy doing it. There was a period earlier this year where I stopped meditating and started doing breath work instead, because it was kind of a choice because of time constraints. I couldn't do both. And there is something else that it sets me up for the day in a different way. The same way as I can do a morning journaling that's gratitude, or I can do a morning journaling which is scheduling and plans for the day. And both of those are useful and both of those have their place, but I can tell my day tends to have a different rhythm to it when I do those different ones. But I adore breathwork. I don't think that I fully understand it or how it works or what's going on beyond, activation of the sympathetic parasympathetic balance and stuff. You know, I've got podcast smarts about it, i.e. I can say something that sounds like I know what I'm talking about. Same with crypto. Yeah, bro, it's all logged on the blockchain.
Ethereum, blockchain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, NFTs. Yeah. And but in terms of knowing what's going on, but I don't need to. I don't feel like I need to know much more. I just come to people like you, experts, and go, hey, man, what should I do? Tell me what to do. Tell me what to do, and I will go away and do it.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, for the vast majority, that's enough, isn't it? And with my journey into breath work, before I got anywhere even close to the science, the first couple of years was just the feeling.
Yeah, definitely. I've got a couple of buddies who've had things happen. So I've got a story from a friend who went to he's part of a mastermind group for young professionals, but it's from Newcastle, north of the UK. For the people that don't know, it's a very spit and sawdust, salt of the earth type group, right? It's Winterfell from Game of Thrones, is based on where I live. So a lot of people that own masonry companies, or they're bricklayers or electricians or plumbers, were at this thing. And my buddy does online marketing, and he was doing some breath work. And this guy stood at the front in a beautiful hall somewhere in the northeast of the UK. And they didn't know what they were there for. The dude leading the mastermind group brings out the coach and say, so we're going to do some breath work today, and explains kind of what's going to happen. And this big burly guy from the back of the class puts his hand up and goes, Paul, excuse me, mate, are you taking the fucking piss? I didn't come here, right? I didn't take Saturday morning off to come here and fucking breathe with all of you. And then Paul had to take him to one side and explain, look, man, I think this is going to be really good for you, blah, 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 blah. Breathwork session begins. 20 minutes into the breathwork session, and that guy was crying in the corner of the room.
Yeah.
That dude was crying in the corner of the room. The guy told me the story, had an out-of-body experience. So he sort of floated above himself. I think they were doing, it was just power breaths for a long, long time.
Right.
Just cycling over and over and over and over again. And he was able to see above himself. And that's something that I couldn't believe it. And he's very, very skeptical. The guy I'm talking about is incredibly skeptical about this sort of thing, and had seen this huge burly bricklayer weep.
Yeah.
His mammoth man just crying his eyes out in the corner of the room, and then he'd had this experience himself. So yeah, I'm familiar with others, but as of yet I haven't ventured into it myself.
Yeah, you've got some things to look forward to there, I think.
I can't wait to weep in the corner of the room. Yeah,
it's
wonderful.
I remember Wim Hof saying, it's going to be like a toilet in here because the shit's going to flow. And it was like, Jesus, God, what do you mean by that? And then suddenly there's 60 of you huffing and puffing. So, okay. So you referenced there a little bit your routines. And again, I think that's super interesting. So you talk us through maybe a bit of your morning and bedtime routines, because I feel like that's some of the key takeaways people can implement quite quickly.
Cool. So my morning routine, or all morning routines as far as I'm concerned, is split up into four buckets. Move, reflect, learn, and prepare. So those are the four buckets that I look to try and fill, at least one from each of them. Upon waking, I will have element in water, which is a type of salt stick. So your adenosine system, which caffeine binds to, isn't active for the first 90 minutes of the day. So if you wake up and you have a caffeinated coffee first thing, it's pointless. It's not doing anything. You're just making your caffeine levels for the entire day increase. So instead, salt in water. LMNT is the type of stick that I use, potassium, magnesium, and sodium blend. That with cold water, go for a 15-minute walk, eyes are open, passive gaze, seeing things move past me, down regulates the amygdala. Come back in, sit down, journal, meditate. At the moment, using Sam Harris's Waking Up. Although for a long time I went unguided, I've needed a bit more of a crutch recently just because I found my practice was slipping. So I went back to doing guided stuff. but I did Unguided, Shinzen Young's Five Ways for a long time. I had a great meditation coach. And after meditation, read for about 15 minutes. Usually, if I've got a guest on the show that evening, it'll be their book. Or if I don't have someone on for the next couple of days, it'll be whatever else I'm going through. Mm. Then I will do my rehabilitation movements. I snapped my Achilles last summer playing cricket, which is like the most British way to do it. And then I'll cook for the day. So I've got up, I've done a walk, I've come back, journal, breathwork or meditation, reading, and then rehab and cooking for the day. That's about an hour and 10 or an hour and 20, depending on what I cook and how long it takes in there. Mm-hmm. But a piece of advice that I got from Ryan Holiday is that you don't need a morning routine, you need routines. And what he means mm-hmm. by that is that you will have maybe four common mornings that you encounter. Four types of morning will cover probably 98% of the mornings that you have in the rest of your life. One will be when you're on holiday, perhaps. One will be when you're rushed and you need to get out of the door. One is when it's a weekend and you're a bit more lazy. One is a normal weekend when you're going to work. So for each of those, I have a sort of a slightly altered routine, but they all tend to have the same thing in. So the walk might get cut down to me just standing outside of my back door for 30 seconds and just looking outside, tiny little bit of sunlight in the eyes and just getting a bit of fresh air, come back. The journal gets done in a minute. I do 1 minute of meditation. I look at two pages of a book and then I go. So you can do all of that in less than 10 minutes. So even if I'm driving to some photo shoot or job somewhere else, it doesn't feel like I'm walking around with one shoe on and one shoe off for the rest of the day. Because if I don't mm-hmm. do a morning routine, that's how it feels. But it doesn't seem to be necessarily about the duration for me to at least feel like I've completed it and started my day off in a good way. It's more to do with just ticking those boxes. So yeah, that's my format. That's how I do.
Okay, so this is where I'm keen to pick your brain now. So I get to the point where my ideal morning routine is so big, I just don't do it. And so what happens is there's this big list and I keep writing it down. I think I need to start that tomorrow. And of course it doesn't start. So I know the obvious answer is we'll just start with one or two things. But have you experienced any of that resistance? And how did you get through that?
Yeah, definitely. I understand the desire for more. Very much so. There's a compulsion to just try and fit all of the cool shit in that you can do. But you just need to pick your battles. And that's why I like having the buckets and filling one from each bucket. Okay, maybe I'm not going to do stretching and jumping on a trampoline and mobility and go for a walk, but maybe I'll do one of them. Maybe I'm not going to have time to do breath work and meditation and lie on an acupressure mat and do whatever else, but I can do one of them, and so on and so on. And I think that putting constraints on it is a good way to do it. And you can periodize as well. The same way that weightlifters periodize their training. Let's say that they're in the off season. They don't mind about maxing out. They're just going to work sub-maximally, maybe 80% 5x5 or something like that. That's how they're going to train. And then they're getting into competition season, so they're going to slightly alter their training a little bit more. And then they're getting into competition preps. They're going to try to change it a little bit more there. For instance, during the winter in the UK, a morning walk, if you get up super early, is probably less beneficial than it is in the summer because you're still in the dark. So one of the things you're trying to do is get sunlight in your eyes. Okay, so maybe during that period, you do a bit more stretching. So you think, well, the stretching kind of can come through that. Maybe you find out that because it's cold on a morning, stretching actually sucks and you really like the cold air on your face. So you're going to do, you know, and you can periodize your training. So I think picking a 90-day commitment to one morning routine that fills one from each of the four buckets is a nice way to do it. And then you can reassess. You go, after 90 days, you've committed to something for a while. You know, you begin red light therapy, but you find it doesn't do anything for you. And you go, okay, well, I've committed for 90 days. I've sealed that one off. I don't need to think about it again. As opposed to doing it guiltily twice a week, not knowing if it actually works or not, and not following a protocol, and then always having it in the back of your mind that, oh, shit, I should use that Juve light again. I really need to. So yeah, that's how I do it.
Nice. I like that. As you were speaking then, and I obviously asked the initial question, I was thinking, do you know what? I think I've got the old morning routine procrastination going on there as well. Because it's like, well, if I can't do any of it, there's no, you know, if I can't do all of it, there's no point doing any of it. And so I think there's that was really helpful. Thank you.
Dude, perfectionism is procrastination masquerading as quality control.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
People that say that they're perfectionists are just procrastinators masquerading as people that like to have high quality work.
Yeah.
Don't let it get in the way, man. Honestly, so Tiago Forte, who's a productivity guru, guy behind Building a Second Brain, he has this he made this really good observation where he said most of the highest leverage people that he knows, all of their work has a rough-edged, half-assed quality to it because they know that polishing things to perfection is a low-leverage activity. Mm. Like, what you're doing by focusing on perfection is not shipping your work at a rate that is required to actually break the market. So you can get away with things being 95% good or 90% good and just getting them out there so much more than waiting to get to 100, because the difference doesn't lie, for most people, the difference isn't going to lie in that final 5 or 10%, sporting competitions and other sorts of individual competitions aside. What it lies in is you churning out consistently good pieces of work. And the same thing goes for your morning routine. The difference between you trying to do a 2-hour morning routine twice a week or a 30-minute morning routine 7 days a week, the 30-minute morning routine 7 days a week is going to be so much better for you. So yeah, don't let the perfect be the enemy of getting it done.
Yes, the compound of the multiple morning routines. I forget who said the quote, but it was the opposite of perfection is done. I'm not sure if that's 100% accurate, but I always like that. But even, yeah, again, it's just good to have these conversations with people because it just kind of snaps you back in. Who do you cite as some of your biggest inspirations then? So you had these moments, you're looking at the stars and you took a pivot, and then you've gone on, I guess, an exploratory journey. I know you've mentioned Joe Rogan and Ryan Holiday and a few others, but who do you attribute to being some of the biggest game changers in your life?
Yeah, Peterson was a big one. As I started on this, that was just as Bill C-16 came out for Jordan Peterson. So he was the first person I'd ever heard talk about the value of being truthful and of telling the truth and of knowing what your inner logos is. Sam Harris has always been there for me as someone. I adore the way that he thinks. I think he's a fantastic thinker, you know, regardless of whether you agree or disagree with his politics. And the same thing goes for Jordan Peterson. I'm not going to Jordan Peterson for his fucking politics. I'm going to Jordan Peterson because he says things that resonate with me and make me a better person. You know, Rogan has this great variety of guests that exposes you beautifully, and that's what I've modeled my show on, that I've not niched down into one particular topic. So I'd say that those guys, Alain de Botton from the School of Life, he was a huge influence, much more sensitive British guy, a lot of talk about empathy and embracing trauma and stuff like that. Those were probably the three, Sam Harris, Jordan, and Alain's channel. They're probably the three biggest influences.
Yeah. Did you ever get a chance to go and see Jordan and Sam live? Because I know they did some stuff, didn't they?
I went to see Jordan at Manchester. He just did a talk on his own. I think I was just getting into him as he did that live event with Sam Harris, with Douglas Murray. Or maybe it was about a year after that. Anyway, I didn't go. I didn't go, which is weird because I'm now mates with Jordan and I'm mates with Douglas Murray, who compared it and was the guy organizing the debate. So, yeah, I was just, whatever, 2 years too late to get VIP.
If they do it again, then clearly you'll be on the front row somewhere.
Yeah, fucking, I'm there.
Yeah. What does the future of modern wisdom look like for you now, do you think? Where do you think you're going to be a couple of years from now, or where do you hope to be?
I think we can be the biggest show in Europe, one of the biggest shows in Europe in the space that we're in. I'm quite, my imposter syndrome manifests as humbleness, but there's not many shows that are doing what we're doing, I don't think. The consistency, the quality of the guests, the caliber of the conversations that we have. It's the first time I've ever felt genuinely competent at something. I've been good at lots of things in the past, but it really does feel like I've kind of got limitless headroom above me with this show. Like I can go as far as my hard work takes me with doing podcasting. I genuinely believe that. So I'm going to spend some time in America. I'm going to take a trip out to Austin. I've got a lot of buddies over there and obviously a lot of contacts and appropriate people to get introduced to over there. And yeah, I turned pro with the show, Turning Pro, Stephen Pressfield's book. Decided to make that commitment halfway through last year, which changed the way that I viewed things. And this is a concept I think a lot of people need to realize. The thing that you're claiming your calling is in life, whatever it is that you feel compelled to do, the thing that you put as the highest priority purpose that you have, are you showing up as an amateur or are you showing up as a professional? Mm-hmm. And for a long time, I was saying that I really loved podcasting and I wanted to become the biggest show in the UK or you know, whatever, the most respected, blah, blah, whatever metric you want to choose. But I was just showing up like an amateur. I wasn't researching as long as I could have been. I wasn't ensuring I got enough sleep. I wasn't eating the things that made me feel good. I wasn't going to the sauna on a morning time that would make me feel energized when I got there on the evening time. I wasn't doing breath work before a show if I felt nervous or if I felt tired. I wasn't researching breath work to work out what sorts of breath work I could do that would engender me into a particular sort of state if I needed to be brought up a little bit, if I needed to calm myself down a little bit. So I was saying outwardly, I want all of this stuff. I want to achieve these things and I have the capacity to. But when you looked at my efforts, they just didn't stack up against that. So I made a commitment last year to turn pro with the show, and that was nice because it's the priority that I have in life now. Everything else is geared towards my performance being as good as it can be. So we think about athletes, right? You think about an Olympic athlete. They gear their entire lives, their training, their social time, their rest, their recovery, their stretching. They watch game tape. They run drills, they do strength and conditioning, they do endurance work. They have a nutrition coach and a mindset coach, and they think about their inner monologue. All of these things, why? Because the metrics for success for an athlete are so tightly defined and they're so obvious to see who's win, who's lost, who's made progress, who hasn't, that that's what the people on the planet trying to squeeze everything that they can out of their performance do. The reason that we don't do that with in the creator industry or in pretty much anything else except maybe music is we presume that there is enough opaqueness between our efforts and the output of our craft that we can get away with doing it. I can get away with having a late night sleep because no one's going to know. And fucking, you don't know if this podcast's better than that podcast in any case. Like, who's to say that week on week it was better? The guest might have been different, or the metrics for success are poorly defined. But if it was powerlifting, I know that I should be able to lift 300 and whatever kilos coming into this competition, and I failed a lift. Why? Well, I didn't sleep very well the night before. But no one ever thinks that about pretty much anything else because the metrics for success are too blurry and they're too difficult to define. So I think treating your pursuit like an athlete or thinking like an athlete with whatever it is that you decide to do is a really powerful concept. And between that and turning pro, they're two things I've focused on over the last year and a half.
I know we'll talk about your reading list towards the end, but you're giving me some gold content here. What was that pivot then that made you say, I'm turning pro?
I spoke to Stephen. I spoke to the guy that wrote the book on the show.
Okay, that'll do it, yeah.
Yeah, so I just had this conversation with him and I really, really adored the book. So The War of Art is an hour-long read and it's phenomenal. And one chapter in it is called Turning Pro. And he then expanded that out to a second book, which is also only an hour. So both of these are in the reading list that I created that we'll plug and will be in the show notes below. But yeah, if you need a kick up the ass, it's half David Goggins kick-ass style motivational stuff, half ephemeral new age spiritual sort of universal love treatise. That's kind of the blend between the two. It's a very interesting book. And yeah, man, I sat down with him and just thought, what are you doing? Like, if you want to become the best that you can be at this, you need to prepare appropriately. So think like an athlete and turn pro.
Somebody's watched this, they've watched it to this point now, they're interested, we've got to, you know, near the hour. What advice can you give somebody that wants to make some changes in their life? Maybe it's a health thing, maybe it's something else. Obviously, we're going to link to your stuff and your reading list, but I'm very keen, like, it's a very open, broad question, but a man on the street, a woman on the street comes up to you and says, you know, I'm just not happy, what can I do? Where would you suggest they start?
One place to begin would be with your morning routine. You know, we've explained what I think is a solid framework for a good morning routine. Mm-hmm. And just start with that. Just start with 5 minutes of each thing. 5 minutes of, let's say that you don't like reading, you're not into reading, but you really want to. Just dedicate 5 minutes to it on a morning. Little walk. Don't have that morning coffee until 90 minutes into the day. Here's one. Fucking sleep with your phone outside of your bedroom. Mm-hmm. Instant 20% increase in quality of life if you sleep with your phone outside of your bedroom. And this isn't because of some woo-woo bullshit to do with 5G brainwaves frying your cells. It's because you don't roll over to funny cat videos and booty pictures. That's why. Just take the charging cable and put it outside of your bedroom. I mean, that's the first thing that everyone should do. Mm-hmm. Other shit, man, like it's the simple stuff that matters. Buy a dog. You know, if you're feeling yourself be super, super neurotic and you're too up in your own head, buy something that desperately needs your attention and your love. and learn to put, or go and volunteer. If you can't, don't have time for a dog, go and volunteer once a month helping pick up litter or work at a children's hospice or at a rescue center for animals or whatever. Just do something that gets you out of your own head. Those are some things that you can do, and they're symbolic, ritualistic representations of you to the world, right? Mm. Look, it's like a pilgrimage that you're taking, and you're doing something that sticks in your memory. Changing the way that you start on a morning is a great idea. And just reduce the amount of time that you use your phone. So intermittent fast for your phone. Do not use your phone before a time on a morning, and do not use your phone after a time on a night. Like there are some people, and I am one of them, who use their phone in the past more than the allocation of time that I have to use my phone now. So my screen time's been upwards of 8 to 10 hours when I was working full-time doing club promo, because everything was run through our phones.
Yeah.
My window to use my phone in is 6 hours now. So, and that's obviously, I'm not staying on it for the entirety of the time. Phone outside of your bedroom. Look at your morning routine. Try and find some creators that speak to you, and just go down the rabbit hole. You know, it might not be Jordan Peterson. It might be females might speak to you a little bit more, or American people, or Australian people, or English people, or whoever it is. Just find a couple of creators and sink into them, and really, really just get crushing amounts of content under your belt. And that to me started to make me think in a very different way. You know, there's only so long that you can listen to good minds talk about interesting things and be immune to it. Like your thought patterns will end up changing. So there's some starter points, I suppose.
People watching this right now, I highly recommend you check out Modern Wisdom, Chris Williamson, the link's down below. And let's just talk briefly about this reading list then, because it's something I'm keen to dig into as well. So if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit of what's going on there.
Yeah, so a lot of people ask for book recommendations. Where should I start if I want to go on a personal development journey? You know, that's one of the questions that you just asked me. Someone wants to make a change. How do I learn some of the things that have had the biggest impact on you? And I decided to just create a huge 50-page PDF with 100 books that you should read before you die. And they were the 100 most interesting and impactful ones that I've read. There's 5 must reads at the top that are kind of like your buy-in. If you're trying to read something else before you've read that first 5, then you need to get started there. There's some fiction stuff in there. Some of it's symbolic. Other bits are just entertaining that I've really loved, and quirky different books that I've found. And then a lot of them are from guests that I've had on the show, and I've been forced to read the book to speak to them. I've gone, wow, this is amazing. I never heard of this before. So there's some hidden gems. And I missed off a lot of the ones that I think people would have probably expected. So Jordan Peterson was very conspicuously absent from the list because I just thought, who needs... He's got 40,000 5-star reviews on Amazon. Mm. Who out there needs me to tell them to read that book? But Turning Pro by Stephen Pressfield, or Red Rising, one of the novels by Pierce Brown that I put in there, those are underground hero books. So I've tried to be a little bit more unique with the approach, rather than just putting the obvious. I mean, James Clear's Atomic Habits is in there, and Essentialism by Greg McKeown's in there. But yeah, there's 100 books that you can read before you die. It's free to download, chriswillx.com/books. chriswillx.com/books. And you can download it for free, and it adds you to my 3-minute Monday newsletter as well, which is all of the stuff that I've gone through. Pretty much everything I've said today is probably verbatim from a newsletter I've written over the last couple of years. So yeah, you get 2-for-1 with that.
Brilliant. Well, the link will be down below, so please everyone check that out. It's been an absolute pleasure to pick your brain. Thank you so much, mate, for your time. Chris, any parting words from yourself?
No, man. I love what you're doing. Keep on going.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you so much for watching Take a Deep Breath podcast. We'll see you next time. Cheers all.
Hey everybody, thank you for sticking right the way through to the end of that podcast. I hope you took plenty of notes from Chris. What a fantastic chap he is. And don't forget, he's just been on Joe Rogan's podcast. So check out Chris's podcast, Modern Wisdom. Check out Chris's reading list. But also pop on over and check out the old Rogan Williamson one, because that's just 2 podcast geniuses that you absolutely want to go just enjoy. So those of you that did stick around, thank you. I really appreciate you. And as I said, this podcast is going to be ramping up soon. So if you know of a guest that you would love for me to interview, ideally in the world of breathwork, but it can be in wellness in general and routines, then put a message down below or drop me an email. I'm open to all sorts of suggestions. Some of the best guests, Dr. Ilan Manga, who you haven't met yet, I'm going to put that podcast up soon. That was just somebody emailed me saying, I think you two would have a wonderful conversation. And we did. So thank you very much for the person that did that email. So yeah, anybody you want to know, if there's breathwork videos that you're interested in me creating, put a comment down below or drop me an email. All the details are down there as well. And again, just a final reminder, functional breathing essentials, the masterclass, a 5-week masterclass, completely risk-free, money-back guarantee, making fantastic transformations in people's lives. If you're interested in knowing more about that, maybe you're on the fence and you're not sure if online learning's for you, then click on that link. I was very much about going to places and being with people, and that's fantastic. But what I realized during the lockdown was, actually, you can do some really good learning in your bedroom or on your phone or on the train, because the way that a lot of these online courses are now, very modular quizzes, you can ask the teacher questions, and you get all of that in my course as well. So if you think about, you know, I've been thinking about doing some breathwork coaching or being trained by somebody, we can do that. I do offer one-to-ones and you can contact me, but actually maybe you're in a different time zone or you just want to learn at your own pace, then the Functional Breathing Essentials course might be for you. Until next time, my friend, thank you so much for watching. Take a deep breath. Maybe try a breathing exercise now, or maybe try this other interview here. Thank you very much. Take care.